Report, HagmanReport.com. That's our website. HomelandSecurityUS.com also for some collective investigative material. Matt Bracken is our guest. EnemiesForeignAndDomestic.com. That's our guest. Navy SEAL, a man who's been to Beirut, really to the gates of hell, and back, and has a great analytical mind. He's an author of Enemies Foreign and Domestic. As a matter of fact, he's got, and I'm going to let him tell you about this, because this is really nice, okay? I love this when guests do this for our audience. This is fabulous. Matt Bracken, you've done something for our audience with respect to your work. Rather than me screw it up, tell us about it.
Yeah, I have, my novels are also on Kindle, and because I knew I was coming on the show today, I put Enemies Foreign and Domestic, my first novel, and also the Bracken Anthology, which is a collection of my more recent short stories and essays, in the Kindle free column for today and tomorrow. So you can just go to Amazon and click download for $0.00 for Enemies Foreign and Domestic and the Bracken Anthology. And the reason I think it's right in track with what we're talking about, Enemies Foreign and Domestic is a false flag novel. You know, it's a novel about creating a false narrative, which is where we find ourselves today. You know, in the first page, somebody shooting into a football stadium causes a mass panic stampede, and the Congress and the president in the next week outlaw semi-automatic rifles, you know, in the backwash of a couple thousand people dying, mostly going over the top of the stadium or getting, you know, trapped in tunnels during a panic. But of course it's blamed on the semi-automatic rifle, and Congress passes a law banning semi-autos. The Bracken Anthology has a lot of short stuff, not exactly short, a few thousand word essays. One is called What I Saw at the Coup, which I think tracks pretty closely to how I see a civil war playing out, you know, in this country, using a lot of electronic means to isolate people and track people, for example. And there's also in there something called When the Music Stops, How America's Cities Will Explode in Violence, which talks about, you know, any kind of either a hack or a natural accident that screws up our electronic benefit transfer system. We'll have our cities going into full-blown riots, food riots, almost immediately. And we might not even be able to recover from something like that. You know, if the stores are all looted in the first week, how do you restart supply when people are starving and people are shooting and killing each other, you know, across our urban landscapes? So anyway, those two are free for today and tomorrow. And good. I encourage people to pick them up and read them.
And I want to tell you, folks, okay, I love to read. I love books. Matt Bracken, his product, his books, his writings, his articles, his work product is the best of the best. So it's right on the money. So,
and I have a new novel also coming out. You know, it's in production now, so it'll be a few weeks to get it into the Amazon system, but it's what I would describe as a counter jihad novel. So this is my This is my Islam novel.
All right.
Called The Red Cliffs of Zerhun. But anyway,
can't wait for that.
Yeah, anyway, this novel will be out in a couple of weeks, and it's my take on Islam, and, you know, from the perspective of 10 or 15 years down the road. You know, sort of a dystopian fiction, you know, civil war in Europe, things like that.
All right. Good. Great. Fantastic. Now, I got to ask you about, before the break, I asked you, and then Joe's got another question, but I asked you, can Donald Trump fire Mueller, or must he go through the Department of Justice in order to get rid of
him? He can fire, he can not only fire Mueller tomorrow, he can fire McCabe and Rosenstein, too. The problem is that it would create a political firestorm, because remember, impeachment is not a legal proceeding. It's a political proceeding. It's not a question of charges being brought against the president. It's a question of the Congress getting 51% of them to vote to impeach him, and then it goes to the Senate where there's a trial. So if he fired Mueller and then, say, in the same, you know, were shut it down, then all of the Democrats in Congress, plus probably enough Republican rhino GOP elites, you know, the McCains and the Lindsey Grahams, would take it as their chance, you know, the revenge of the swamp. So we would probably get enough, you know, 100% of Democrats and 10% of Republicans to vote for impeachment. So, yes, he can do it, but there would be a political cost which would probably lead to his impeachment. That doesn't mean he's kicked out of office. Bill Clinton was impeached, but he wasn't convicted in the Senate. It didn't, I don't think it even went to the Senate. But,
correct.
But, you know, the better strategy at this point for Trump, using very effective surrogates, and I would count, you know, like Sean Hannity at the top of the list, Rush Limbaugh, using, and of course his own Twitter account, to discredit Comey and Mueller, you know, to tie them together as corrupt swamp lawyers, you know, that are trying to protect each other's past corruption by taking out the swamp drainer. So it's the swamp lawyers versus the swamp drainer. If he fires Mueller, I think he gets impeached. If he discredits Mueller, Mueller might be petrified that there's going to be a parallel investigation of his own corruption, you know, tracking Mueller and Comey's actions back over many years. So it's a political game much more than a legal game at this point. But it's definitely Game of Thrones territory, and I absolutely do believe at this point, you know, I have no particular knowledge about Seth Rich, but I think a lot of people believe he was killed, and this has a chilling effect. So I think we are definitely in the era of wet ops. You know, we're in the era of people being murdered over things. When millions of dollars are at stake, in the case of the Clinton Foundation, hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars, for a few $100,000, you can hire ex-special forces guys to kill anybody you want. I mean, that's the sad truth today. You know, for a relative pocket change, you can hire some, you know, knuckle-dragging fool who can shoot a rifle and take people out. So, and you can even have it so that it'll look like a car accident. You know, you went off of a cliff and on a mountain road, or you had a heart attack. You know, you go for a walk around the neighborhood and somebody walks up and, you know, asks you for directions and you get a puff of something in the face that gives you an instant heart attack that is all organic. We've had this for decades. The CIA has, so I assume everybody does. It's a completely organic compound and it'll break down within the body within, you know, 24, 48 hours. So unless a pathologist already knows to be looking for certain, you know, chemical traces that are going to break down in the body very quickly, it's almost a perfect crime. So I think we're in the zone now of people not only being afraid of being ruined, like losing their pension, you know, getting fired from the FBI. This woman at the heart of the McCabe situation, the McCabe and Flynn situation, I think her name is Ritz, something like that. It's in Circa News today. She's at the, she made the allegations of sexual harassment against McCabe. And,
there was Sarah Carter wrote about that or,
Right. And Flynn came to her defense, and I guess Flynn made an enemy out of swamp lawyer McCabe.
Yep.
So McCabe is somebody who would be able to unmask and then leak. So this is the kind of sleazy skullduggery that's afoot. So not only are they willing to ruin people, like this woman, I think she's like in her, you know, late 40s, she lost her house out of this deal. You know, so this is like, can't get work within you know, anything requiring a security clearance. She's ruined. So they not only will ruin people, I believe that they would pay thugs to walk up behind somebody in Washington and shoot them in the back with a revolver. You know, we're playing for high stakes. When people at the Clinton level are potentially facing prison time, which is not going to be fun if you're already pushing 70 years old, you're facing prison time, loss of tens of millions of dollars. Well, through cutouts of cutouts of cutouts, you know, the word goes downhill. If somebody took out Seth Rich, it would help us a lot and it would make a good example. I think that's where we are now. So we're on a slippery slope to a kind of a dirty war where assassinations are definitely part of the menu.
Man,
for sure. Not to mention all the lunatics like Hodgkinson being flushed out to go and, you know, shoot up Republican events.
And folks, we're going to be talking about Hodgkinson as well tomorrow. Craig Sawyer, Russ Dizdar, in that aspect. Now, Matt Bracken is our guest again, Navy SEAL author, tremendous author, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. Plus, he's giving to the audience for the next, 24, 36 hours. He's got
tomorrow night.
Okay. All right. So you got a very special offer there. Take advantage of it. Go to enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. And, before he leaves, he's going to give him a chance to tell about it one more time. Joe, you've got a question.
Yeah, Mr. Bracken, kind of switching gears here, and we don't have to get into this if this isn't something you want to get into. The USS Fitzgerald, there have been a number of different reports about what actually happened on that ship. I reviewed the course that both the Fitzgerald was taking and the cargo ship that hit it was taking. And there's some interesting questions that come up. Do you have any thoughts on what happened? And I'll just throw what I think, what possibly could have happened out there. It looks as though from the cargo ships, the way that it passed the Fitzgerald real close and then did a U-turn directly back toward it, hit it, and then went back out. People are speculating that there's some kind of electronic interference due to the redundant number of systems on the destroyer, and none of them registered an alarm. What do you think happened with the Fitzgerald?
Yeah, I have a very high confidence that we will find out exactly what happened, because the U.S. Coast Guard, Japanese Coast Guard, and the U.S. Navy and the insurance companies are all investigating this. So they're cross-checking each other very closely. At first, I thought it could have been a kamikaze thing because of the timeline that had the collision happening at like 2:20 in the morning was actually erroneous. That's when the distress call went out, but the hit came around 1:30 in the morning. And I've studied this pretty closely. United States Institute Proceedings, very prestigious website and magazine, they have some very good threads on this with people bringing in comments that are very knowledgeable. Even though I was a Navy SEAL, I had to kind of play junior surface warfare officer a few times. Crossing the ocean, my platoon would be on another ship in an amphibious squadron. I would ride on the flagship with the Commodore, who's a Navy captain of a little fleet of amphibious ships. So I'd be on the flag bridge, and I was, you know, involved with, you know, the navigation of these squadrons through the Straits of Gibraltar, English Channel, places like that. And so I, even though I wasn't a surface warfare officer, I was on the bridge at night, standing watch. I kind of had a picture of what's going on. And it, of course, it's inexcusable, and, you know, people are going to be losing their careers, and rightfully so. But it looks like the container ship was on autopilot, which is not surprising. The days of sailors standing behind a wheel, that's like 50 years ago. The way that you steer today is you walk over to the autopilot and you say go, and you push in plus 10 to the right, and then the computer just makes it happen. Nobody's actually standing behind a wheel on a container ship. On the naval ship, they are, because they have so much manpower. You know, the naval ship is one-third the size of the container ship, but it has 10 times the crew, like 200 compared to 20. So on the bridge of the container ship, you might have one guy on duty who may or may not be, reading a book or looking at a laptop over on the side and looking at the radar every 5 or 10 minutes. On the Navy ship, you have a bridge watch, officer of the deck. You have lookouts on the bow, both bridge wings outside with binoculars, with a headset to talk to the bridge. On the back of the ship, the front of the ship, both sides, combat information center. And they're constantly plotting every ship out there, making what's called a CPA, closest point of approach, which is a mathematical solution showing if we're on this course, where will their hypothetical course cross our path? And the captain will have night orders that will say if there's any CPA, closest point of approach, closer than 4,000 yards or 10,000 yards, what be that the case as it is, for different areas, different times, the captain should be awakened, you know, to come to the bridge, which will only take him, you know, 20 seconds to get there. And he probably had, in most ships, the captain even has a radar repeater even in his own bed. So he can just, you know, flip it on and look over and see what they're seeing on the bridge in terms of the radar. But apparently what happened is the container ship was coming not quite at a 90 degree angle, but from abaft the beam, which means that it's if you're more than 22 degrees behind a 90 degree angle, which is basically where the red and green lights go, okay, as far as the red and green lights are like this. If you're further behind than that, and then it's an overtaking situation, and this vessel, the destroyer, is the stand-on vessel, okay? So if you're coming from a 90 or from the front, then this ship has to give way if it's a starboard situation. My hands are probably wrong from the camera, but if it's from behind, it's an overtaking situation. The destroyer would just maintain its course and speed. So when they're 10 minutes out, they're plotting a CPA, and it looks like, okay, he's going to pass us 1,000 yards in front. Now, to the bridge wing lookouts and the stern lookout, it actually became a CBDR, constant bearing decreasing range. That's the nightmare. That's where you're going to actually hit out here. Boom. So if the initial plot was he's going to pass 1,000 yards in front, and everybody's saying, okay, that's cool, but then the container ship, not based on what it saw of the destroyer or didn't see of the destroyer, but based on its computer-generated path around Japan, going around shoal areas and small islands, its own computer is going like your GPS in your car, waypoint to waypoint. So the container, on autopilot, makes a 15-degree turn to port. It's no longer going to pass 1,000 yards out in front. It's now CBDR, constant bearing decreasing range. But it doesn't look very different to the watch standers. The guy out on the starboard bridge wing, the guy on the back, he's been told, okay, don't worry, he's going to pass 1,000 yards in front. We worked the CPA. We're okay. But if the container ship, the computer of the container ship, based only on its course around the Japanese islands, instructs it to turn 15 degrees to the left, now you've got a collision course. What should be happening, of course, is that these guys are on the radio. They're on the VHF, ship to ship, just like you have on a commercial or pleasure boat. Channel 16, everybody, Navy, everybody. Hello, Captain, are you turning? But nobody was communicating. It appears that nobody was communicating. So until maybe the last minute, everybody thought he was going to clear, but he had turned 15 degrees to port, and it was a collision. It's unbelievable to think that a collision can happen without the collision alarm going off, which is like even in daytime, it's much louder in the middle of the night. It's like that you can't, like a Three Mile Island meltdown alarm, so that everybody on the ship would instantly be awake, even if you only had 10 seconds. You might have time to get out of your rack and up a ladder and escape that berthing compartment. But apparently, the skipper of the ship and the men down in the berthing compartment, they were just completely gobsmacked. They were just completely taken by surprise. So this will all come out in the inquests. But another factor is that the Navy doesn't ping AIS because it's a warship. It's blacked out. It doesn't show any light at all. It's made of radar absorbing materials. It's meant to be stealthy. And it's depending on its own situational awareness to avoid fishing boats, guy in a canoe, anything from the smallest to the biggest. The other guys on the container ship, they're basically an unguided missile. They're running on autopilot. So it's like a perfect storm. You have this super stealthy blacked out ship that thinks it's the stand-on vessel in an overtaking situation. And you have an unguided missile that makes a 15-degree course turn by the computer with nobody really watching. So when the hit happened, the container ship went back, slowed, and then went back on course and got up to speed, which meant it was under computer control the whole time. It just felt an obstacle, which threw it off course. Then the computer said, oh, we've lost speed and we've gone off course. Pick up speed again and get back on course. So they didn't even react to it as a collision initially. Of course, on the Navy ship, all hell broke loose, but they didn't even have radios that were working for almost an hour. So it's like a perfect storm of an unguided missile, the cargo container, under computer and autopilot control, versus a stealthy ship which had the wrong situational, it had an incorrect closest point of approach after that last turn by the container ship.
You know, you're not going to hear, folks, you're not going to hear this in-depth explanation on the mainstream media. Even when you think you are, you're not. That was a fantastic explanation. So, bottom line, go ahead.
And just one more question, Matt. Do we know why the container ship at first passed the Fitzgerald and then did a 180-degree U-turn coming right back to it? Has that been explained?
No, this is later. The big U-turn is quite a bit later. The initial, there's turns before the collision, that 15-degree to port turn, which made it from a passing situation, which the destroyer thought, we're in the clear, it's going to pass in front of us. That subtle 15-degree turn a few minutes out put it into a collision. But it wouldn't look super obvious to the guys with binoculars and so forth. Now, because they're still seeing the red light, the port light, the port side light of the container ship. That's what they've been seeing for half an hour. It just is now getting closer when you've been told it's going to pass 1,000 yards in front. So it must have been a total panic situation in that last minute or so. But once you're into the last minute, it's a really dangerous time, because if you don't have a clear understanding, there have been warships that have gotten like run over by their own aircraft carrier. There have been cruise liners that hit each other. If you get into a confused situation where you both are assuming everybody's going to do what they should at the last minute, it's sort of like if a punch is coming at your face or a hurricane is coming at you. Do I jump in my car and go north or south? Well, maybe the hurricane turns the last minute and nails me, whether I went north or south. Or if the punch is coming and I duck to the left, maybe I ducked into the punch. So it's really dangerous if you're waiting till the last minute or 30 seconds to speed up or make a big turn. And I think that the destroyer thought it was a stand-on vessel that didn't understand that the cargo container had changed course subtly to make it a collision.
So, bottom line, you would describe this to, you would not describe terrorism to this situation or hacking or anything like that.
Double human error.
Gotcha.
But the bulk of the error has to go to the Navy ship, because it's assumed, I'm an ocean sailor, mm-hmm. I assume that every cargo ship out there is flying blind. You know, I assume that it might make a turn at me without even knowing I'm on the ocean. Gotcha. Or caring, really.
Yeah.
So you assume that they're unguided missiles. But the guy on the bridge wing with binoculars, he's been looking at that red light for the last half hour, and he's talking to the bridge. Bridge, he looks like he's getting mighty close. And the bridge might have been saying, no, he's going to pass 1,000 yards in front. That's based on the CPA plotting that was done 10 minutes earlier before the ship turned 10 degrees to the left.
Got it. All right. And thank you for that wonderful explanation. Folks, share this segment with everyone you know. Matt Bracken, knowledgeable about these events or about these situations. Of course, his background as a Navy SEAL. Well, you understand his background. We only have
I got to play on ships. I got to play around on the bridges of ships, because the commodore of these little amphibious squadrons, they would have the senior SEAL on the flagship with them commonly crossing the oceans, and they wouldn't just let me hang out in my bunk. You know, they had me playing junior ship driver up on the bridge with the rest of them.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, we've learned a lot from you today, and I want to thank you for your gracious gift of time. I'll give you another opportunity here. We've got about a minute left. Tell people about your offer of your books, your articles, your product, please. And then thank you, by the way, for doing that for our audience as well. Until tomorrow night, go ahead and tell us.
Okay, well, and my first book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, which is a false flag, false narrative novel, is free on Kindle today and tomorrow till tomorrow midnight. Also, the Bracken Anthology, which gets into some Civil War scenarios, some civil breakdown scenarios, that's free. That's called the Bracken Anthology. Those are both free on Kindle. All of my books are available, paper and Kindle. My new novel will be out in a couple weeks. It's already finished. It's just a matter of being in production. And the Enemies trilogy is also an audiobook on Amazon ACX. And as well, if you really track me down, you can get signed copies through my post office, which you can find on my website.
We're going to track you down, Matt. By the way, I'm looking at this. Is that an artillery shell? You got? I'd like to see the gun that goes to.
Oh. Yeah, I've got some. Yeah. I have some.
Is that
too
your,
late? Are we going out? Is that the outro?
Is the gun in your garage or what? I'm kidding. All right. Hey, thanks, Matt. Thanks for being a good sport. Oh, appreciate you, brother.
You bet.
You have a good
night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, folks. That was Matt Bracken. Fantastic interview. We got still half the show left. Standale's coming up in not the next segment, but at 9 o'clock. So make sure you don't go anywhere. We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Stay tuned.
Visit HagmannReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is, it'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric's a,
it's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Chang Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either. But they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues. And so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changecoastandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagmann and Hagmann Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagmann for making this all possible. God bless.
We'll be right back.
Oh, now you mute yourself. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. No, this is not the 5-3, okay? No, we're not doing that. I apologize for my lack of professional demeanor tonight. Yeah, just really, seriously.
Hey, no, you gotta have fun.
Honestly, look, these are some dark times, and these are perilous times, but you go out, you watch a couple of dogs, watching a lady, the studio dog, play with Theo and Jackie and Eric's dog, and just enjoying the heck out of that. And of course, Eric the tech created this wonderful graphic with King, the iconic dog. And I want to thank Nancy Stone. Nancy, I think about you a lot. Who painted King's picture, oil paint. I mean, what a beautiful picture, and sent it to us. Thank you so much, you know, for your gift. And that really means a lot to us, but it means a lot that you're listening and you're sharing this program with others. We have a very special guest, Sergeant Tim Weldon, outlawpatriotnews.wordpress.com is on with us. So I'm going to kick it to you because, this is a guy that his writing skills are just amazing. His knowledge is amazing. I'm going to kick it over to you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sergeant Tim is our guest. He was on with us, I believe it was last week. For a little bit, or if not, just a few weeks ago, and he's got trying to pull up the Hagman Report here, the piece on Hagman Report. Thank you, Eric, from the desk of Sergeant Tim. What would war with Russia look like? And I read this piece. It's very good. Sergeant Tim, welcome back to the show.
Hey Joe. Hey Doug. Thank you guys so much for having me back on.
Hey, well, it's great to have you, brother.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on, and thanks for, writing for and posting it on Hagman Report. I know that it's gotten quite a few hits.
He's a talented writer, man.
We monitor the traffic, and it is a very relevant and timely topic, because one thing when we see this meddling of, you know, this warmongering between the U.S. and Russia, we've seen so much recently, and it's been going on for years now. You know, the close calls between in the airspace between Russia and the U.S. Most recently, I believe it was the reaction to the U.S. shooting down a Syrian jet, where a Russian plane flew within 5 feet of a U.S. military aircraft. And we keep having these close calls, and we also have the mainstream media demonizing Russia, trying to bring down Trump, but using Russia as the boogeyman. And it seems that, after the Cold War and the long standoff between Russia and even after Obama, that with Trump we were going to see some stabilization between the U.S. and Russia relations. But things seem to have been deteriorating over time for a number of reasons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you want to start with this story, Tim?
Well, first of all, I just want to say how great it was to listen in on Matt Bracken. It's absolutely great that you guys give a platform for my veteran brothers and sisters to come out, speak their mind, and give people information from that perspective that so many of us get from all around the world. And so I really thank you guys for opening up your platform to that. Joe, you were talking about how the media is dehumanizing the Russians. And I would say that we see the same thing happening, talking about civil war here in America, we see the same thing happening on both sides of this whole ideological issue. We see the mainstream media dehumanizing the Republican Party and the Trump supporters. We see some people in the alternative media dehumanizing the Democrats. And one of the things that I would really try to remind people is, while there certainly are Luciferian elements and some really evil people at the top of some of these political parties, your neighbor down the road likely isn't involved in pedo-gate. Your neighbor down the road is not doing spirit cooking in his backyard. Hopefully the only cooking that he's doing is some grilling out back, especially with the 4th of July coming up. But what we're seeing is this split along ideological lines that is the result of a division that is, it's really been a slow boil over time. And I don't know that we could have really expected anything else out of a two-party system where you basically split the people in half anyhow. We have a system that's basically the cola wars, Coke versus Pepsi. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of an RC guy in this, and give me an RC cola and a moon pie and leave me alone. But what I've seen over, some of the alternative media has played a role in this, as well as a lot of the social media posts, and I would encourage everyone to check out and see how many of the people on social media are actually people and how many are bots. I believe that whenever the presidential election was going on, they came out with a story that said that both Obama and Hillary had a massive army of bots that bumped up their numbers on, for instance, Twitter and Facebook and the like. But we see a narrative being pushed across social media of people calling for civil war. And I will tell the Hagman audience, I'll tell both of you guys, these people that are calling for civil war have absolutely no idea what they're calling for. I've been to the Balkans area. I've been to the line of conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan, where you have the breakaway province Nagorno-Karabakh that used to be part of Azerbaijan. It has mostly an Armenian population, but it broke away from Azerbaijan and resulted in a war between the two countries, and then a civil war between Nagorno-Karabakh and Azerbaijan. And when you talk about civil war, what you're talking about is families versus families. I think most people have heard the stories from our own American Civil War, of brother against brother, father against son. And so it's families versus families, it's friends versus friends. Take a look around your neighborhood this evening and look at the houses. If you live in an apartment building, just look around the hall, look at your neighbors. And these are the people that that in a civil war situation you very well could be fighting. The sounds of children playing in neighborhoods would be replaced with cries of the dead and the dying. We'd have people starving to death in the streets. And even more worrisome, in this ideological back and forth, is that most times in civil wars we have the most radical elements that rise to the top, because the emotions of the people are at such a high level that and people are so angry that they're willing to listen to the most radical elements. And then we get things like Lenin in the Soviet Union. You have Slobodan Milosevic in Serbia. And I would just also say this. I was talking about coming on here tonight, and my daughter at the dinner table tonight, she said, do people not realize that those that do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it? And that's exactly what we're seeing play out before us here in this country right now. Isn't it, Doug and Joe?
How close are we? To a shooting war.
Looking at the anger in this country, I think that we're very close. I think that if you look at, these rallies that are going on around the country, and I understand that people are proud, that their candidate won. People are upset that theirs didn't. But I really don't understand the need for these Trump rallies when he's already won. I think the best thing that you can do if you're a Trump supporter is go back to work. you know, voice your support to your congressman to get them to pass his agenda. But I think that these people that are going to these rallies on both sides are really just looking for a fight. And that is what is going to lead to this situation.
Let me take issue with you here, okay? I get what you're saying, okay? When I say issue, I'm not... okay, this country is filled with LGBT month. When the hell are we going to have heterosexual marriage heterosexual man month? It's Black month. It's Cinco de Mayo. It's all of this diversity crap. And it's nothing, what we're not seeing is the core of America, American ideology, the Judeo-Christian ethic, the Judeo-Christian spirit being used as the rallying cry. I agree with you, however, spiking the football in bad form. Spiking the football in the form of rallies, you know, that you've already got a candidate that is right. Assumed the presidency. In that spirit, I totally agree with you. It's the reaction on the other side, by the other side, of course, that we have to worry about, in my estimation. Now, again, that's my only complaint, if I had a complaint, or an issue. I'm not saying that you're not wrong. I'm just, you know, saying, well, wait a minute. You know, there's, okay. However.
I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just however, and then you go ahead. And finish, because
I absolutely think that we have to bring this country back to where it was, you know, the country that I grew up in, that you grew up in, Doug, that you grew up in, Joe. However, I think that these rallies serve an excellent place for a false flag to be conducted. And what I mean by that is you have all these Trump supporters out there. We've already had the press pushing this narrative that Trump supporters want violence, that Trump supporters are violent. And so all you need is one of these Antifa lunatics to come out in a Make America Great Again hat and open fire in the middle of the crowd, and you have your optical, you know, as John says, your optical dissonance, your optics for that very narrative to be proven true.
We had a guy almost wearing a Bernie Sanders shirt, you know, and a Che Guevara cap with a name tag saying, "I'm with him." Open fire on a group of our lawmakers.
And I agree with you there. I think I know where you're going with this, is that we're already at that point where we're seeing the for lack of a better term, because I don't like saying the whole left-right thing, because I think no one is 100% left and no one is 100% right, but you already have it firing up. But what I would say also is we are the people, whether you consider yourself Christian conservative, whether you consider yourself Republican, whether you consider yourself something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, which is Christian libertarian, we are the people who are supposed to be on the moral high ground. And we cannot say that we are on that moral high ground if we're looking for the fight. And I'm not saying that everyone that is showing up to these rallies is that way. And I definitely think this country is something to fight for. I took an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. But when we talk about these rallies on both sides, you know, the rallies, the marches, the protests, what we're seeing is the build up to something that we should try to tone down now and realize that while the other side may not be as educated or as awake to what is going on in the world around them, it could perhaps be a teachable moment.
I'm with you there. And I look, the last thing I want to do is draw first blood. And I certainly would never do that. And I don't advocate violence. But you've got, there's virtual silence from the conservative element of our society against people like that Lapone monster. And I'm going to tell you something, all right? You get me on the red carpet with that Patty Lapone or whatever her name is and a bar of soap, and that's all I need to say. All right. But you got that numbskull. I used to like him, that actor. What's his name? De Niro?
Yeah, De Niro.
Bobby De Niro. Okay. Saying he'd punch Trump in the mouth. You got Madonna saying, blowing up the White House. Shouldn't we answer this? Do we just let this go? The police, they're not doing anything. The Secret Service, obviously, they respond to real legitimate threats, which these are not. This is hyperbole protected by the First Amendment. I get that, at least most of it. Although Moron in London, Depp. All right.
Oh, yeah.
He came pretty doggone close to, and in fact, I would say he needs a visit from the Secret Service. But all that said, where's the voice on the conservative side saying shut up? And should there be one? Go ahead, sir.
I do think that there should be one, and I think that's exactly what we should be doing is pointing out the fact that these people are using whether it's stars using their popularity or it's the media. Project Veritas came out with those videos about CNN staging this entire Russian collusion narrative, which we all already knew, but that is the smoking gun on it. But whether it's these stars, whether it's the mainstream media, they are the ones who are driving this narrative. You look at Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Eric Holder, all saying that they're part of the quote-unquote resistance. Words have power and words have meaning. And so whenever you use that kind of, for lack of a better term, a verbal archetype of resistance, then what you're doing is you're sending a subliminal message to the people that there is something to resist against, and B, that you are willing to go to war to resist whatever, tyranny they perceive that to be. And whenever we have the public schools who are teaching this kind of new ideology of you pointed out LGBT, the fact that every person, is a special snowflake and that, kind of driving this racial narrative, then this call for resistance has a breeding ground because everyone perceives themselves as slighted in some way. And it drives that home. But I think that what we have to do is not allow that breeding ground to turn us into the same thing. We have to be the voice of reason in an environment that is full of nonsense.
Amen. That's exactly right.
For the sake of our children, I would agree with you.
Seriously. And don't get me wrong, Doug. I'll get in there and I'll scrap with the best of them, but I don't want to see this country become like some of the places that I've seen with the bombed out buildings, the children with empty eyes and no future. I don't know about you guys. I kind of enjoy the first world status. And,
I agree with you, and I appreciate your honesty and integrity behind this. I do agree with you on this. More than I would disagree. So what would happen, given your observations, which are vast, in different countries, what would happen if we had another Hodgkinson situation, only worse? not from the right, but from the left, from the progressive Marxist idiot, progressive mind-numb people. Or if, God forbid, the president was shot, what would happen in this country? Would we roll
over? I definitely think that if President Trump was assassinated or even shot, not necessarily killed, I definitely think that it would change this nation in a moment, unlike even 9/11. I think that you would see, groups out in the streets, ready for warfare. I pray that that doesn't happen. And I say to people all the time, because as much as I don't want it to happen, I almost feel like it's a foredrawn conclusion, because I don't know that we can turn this around. I pray that we can, but I don't know that we can turn this around completely. And that really scares me.
It scares me too. And anyone who doesn't fear that, to me, again, you're an idiot, because you don't know what you're asking for. And the environment would be totally different. It really would. And you're right. You've been to these war-torn countries.
Well, and that's why I tell people, whenever we talk about prepping, whether it's a friend on the street or it's in my writing, I tell people that one of the most important elements of prepping is spiritual preparation. And a lot of people don't really understand what that means, but I think that you have to prepare yourself spiritually for A, what you'll witness, and B, what you will have to do during that time to protect yourself and protect your family.
Absolutely right, Sergeant Tim. We only have just a few minutes left. This was a really, really quick interview.
I do love you. I really do. Just so you know, I wasn't giving you a hard time.
I love you too, Doug.
I'm on your side.
Oh, no, I love discussion, Doug. I really do.
All right.
Just real quick, Tim, in the closing minutes, Syria, we see this, the U.S., the recent shooting downs of the drones and the fighter jet, as we talked about, and you came on and talked about that last fighter jet shoot down the day that it happened. Has the ISIS that's in Syria right now, there are Russians fighting ISIS, there is the U.S. allegedly fighting ISIS, you even have Iran in there. Do you see a time where ISIS will be stomped out in Syria?
I think as long as the deep state is around, it won't be. And I think as long as the Saudis are in power, it won't be. We've seen the Middle East kind of split between a Iranian bloc, Iranian-Russian bloc, and a Saudi bloc. And what we're seeing is a build-up to a wider Middle East war. And I think that with as much rhetoric as going on, being thrown about by the Saudis as far as for instance, Qatar supporting, they're wanting and I'm sorry, I'm kind of stumbling over my words, but they're wanting to kind of push Qatar to the side outside of their bloc, because Qatar continues to have relations with Iran, and they're also calling on Qatar to shut down Al Jazeera. I think that the Saudis are probably funneling just as much, if not more, money and resources to ISIS as what we've seen Turkey do in the past. And I think that as long as we are propping up that side, which, I understand the reason why we do that is because of the agreement about the petrodollar, and without the petrodollar, the U.S. dollar would suffer tremendously. But as long as they're there doing that, I don't think that we'll see an end of ISIS. And if ISIS does start to lose power, I fully expect that we'll see the rise of Al-Qaeda again.
Yeah, because my next question was going to be, doesn't ISIS's presence in Syria actually help the U.S.'s military and other strategic objectives when it comes to Iran and Russia?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the destabilization of Syria, the fact that Syria has a mutual defense treaty with Iran, the fact that Iran and Syria are both close with Russia, destabilization of Syria keeps them from gaining very much power. And then number two, it continues to give us a reason to have forces deployed into the Middle East, you know, as kind of an excuse for having them there, whether that be, you know, to safeguard those trade routes, for the oil supply coming here, or whether it be for other possibly more nefarious reasons.
Excellent, excellent insight. Folks, our guest, Sergeant Tim Weldon, outlawpatriotnews.wordpress.com is the website.
Talented.
He also
writer.
Posts for HagmanReport.com.
Yep.
And again, you can check out his latest article there, which is titled, From the Desk of Sergeant Tim, What Would War with Russia Look Like? And it's a great read.
Great read.
Everybody check it out and read it. Sergeant Tim, look forward to talking with you again in the near future. Thanks for coming on with us
tonight.
Thank
you, sir. Thanks for humoring me as well, tolerating me.
Thank you so much for having me on. God bless you, God bless your families, and God bless all the listeners.
Amen. Well, God bless you, too. Folks, we'll be right back after this message. Don't go anywhere.